Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
If your wallet contains photos of your spouse, kids, and at least one trophy bass, you might be a redneck, but you're definitely a conservationist. Hey, this is Jeff Foxworthy. Join me and America's 40 million sport shooters and 44 million anglers in celebrating National Hunting and Fishing Day. Congress set aside the fourth Saturday of September to thank hunters and anglers for their funding and hard work in fish, wildlife, and habitat conservation. Learn more at nhfday.org.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family for 12 months from date of purchase. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year, and while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends on Skype. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Sports Craftsman's Warehouse started right here in Utah, and as you probably already know, it's your headquarters for everything hunting. With the season in full swing, Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need to gear up for the hunts. But if hunting's not your thing, you've got to see the selection of great camping supplies, from tents, sleeping bags, packs, and lanterns, to thousands of accessories. And with football season, let's not forget tailgating. Let's talk grills, pop-up shelters, tables, and chairs galore. There's something for everyone. Sportsman's Warehouse, Utah born, Utah proud.
Get ready to ride PWCs and OHVs this summer season with Utah State Parks Online Education. OHV education is required for youth aged to 15, and PWC education is required for youth aged 12 to 17. Utah's personal watercraft and off-highway vehicle youth education programs required by law are now online at www.stateparks.utah.gov.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier, all with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious? And all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world. Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Anderson joins us once again with Anderson Seed and Garden. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Oh, I'm so glad I could join you and spend a little bit of time.
I'm excited to have you on the program. We're gearing up for the big pumpkin weigh-off on Center Street in Logan, and that's coming up this weekend.
This weekend, Saturday. It starts at 11 o'clock in the morning and should go till about 7 o'clock. We're shooting for sundown, and we've got activities and games and fun, just like planned all day long. And of course, the centerpiece is the giant pumpkins. There's just nothing like it. If you want to come see some huge pumpkins, this is the place to be.
Now, fall's a great time. I like this event because it ties into a lot of other fall activities in the garden. And you have a lot of great deals going on and a lot of fun things. I bought a couple new varieties of garlic myself just last week over at your shop. And tell us about the garlic you have available.
Yeah, so fall is when a lot of different bulbs show up. So we have about 22 different varieties of garlic to try. And if you like garlic, we have so many things to try, whether they're soft necks or whether they're hard neck varieties. Now, of course, all garlic tastes like garlic, but every variety has unique flavors and unique aromas, and some store a little bit better than others. And we've got all kinds of varieties to choose from here at Anderson Seed and Garden. But at the same time, all of our fall bulbs show up as well, too. So we've got tulips, daffodils, hyacinths, crocus, allium, and all those fall-planted bulbs that have just arrived, and it's like perfect time to plant those in your garden to enjoy the flowers and to enjoy the show, really, for next year.
You've also got some great deals in the back, the stuff out in the nursery.
It's our fall cash sale here at Anderson Seed and Garden, and we put all of our trees, flowering trees, shade trees, shrubs, flowering shrubs, evergreens, vines, they're all on sale. But if you pay with cash, you get an extra 25% off on your purchase if you pay with cash. And we're talking dead presidents on green bills, not a debit card, not a check, for cash. You'll get that extra 25% off and get whatever we have left. And it's a great time of year to plant trees and shrubs and to add a few things to your landscape. And so we're trying to find homes for all those plants we have left over this year, and hopefully it's at your house.
Great deals there. A lot of good selection still available, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just looked, walking in the back door, there's some really gorgeous evergreens. There's some hydrangeas, got some cotoneasters. I even have fruit trees left, too. So there's some nice cherry trees and some nice apples out there as well, too. So still a really good selection. And then a lot of our customers that are coming in right now are concerned about getting their lawn looking good after a really hot, dry summer. And so we've got some great fertilizers for fall. We've got some Humate that will help perk your lawn back up and get it looking good again after the stresses of the summer. It's a great time to aerate and even overseed with a little bit of new grass. If you want to incorporate some new varieties of grass into your turf, this is prime time for doing that. And a lot of the newer varieties of grasses not only look good, but they are disease, insect resistant, they're drought tolerant, they green up early in the spring, they stay greener later into the fall. And so it's a really good time to incorporate some of those new varieties into your turf in the fall.
You can save a lot of water and a lot of money just by a small investment this time now. And it's the perfect time to overseed a lawn and rejuvenate your lawn and make it better for next year.
Oh, absolutely. So a lot of our customers who've dealt with insect damage in their turf, the money that you spend to do an insecticide, you could take that money, invest it into a new variety of grass that's going to stick around for years and years, and it will make your grass resistant to those insects and drive them somewhere else, like maybe to your neighbor's house. And then you don't have to worry about putting insecticide on your turf ever again, because your grass is now resistant to these insects.
You got several different mixes available, I know. Do you have a couple names you want to drop for folks out there listening?
So our most insect and disease-resistant variety is called Mark's Mix. It's a blend of turf-type rye and turf-type fescues, super drought-tolerant. A lot of my customers will use maybe once a week or once every 10-day applications of water, even in the hot, dry part of the summer. And their grass will stay mostly green for the entire year. And it's got a nice texture to it. It's not like stiff and prickly to walk on barefoot. But it is definitely a little bit thicker bladed grass than, say, a Kentucky bluegrass mix. We also sell a lot of our Colorado Premium, which is a blend of premium bluegrasses and turf type rye. So it gives you a little bit more drought tolerance, but definitely a little bit more durability. It wears a little bit nicer without showing traffic, but it still has that really deep color and it gives you that insect and disease resistance built into it. So there's some amazing varieties of grass. Like if you planted your turf maybe 20 years ago, the technology has improved so much in 20 years that you won't believe how much better the grasses are now than they were just even 20 years ago. It's almost like replacing your car. Hey, this is my favorite truck. I've had it for 20 years. I really don't want to replace it with something else. But then you go and you test drive, and all of a sudden it's got that big monitor that shows you your backup camera, and it's got the heated seats, and it's got the cooling seats, and all of a sudden you're realizing that there's so many new options that you never had before that's worth it to upgrade that truck.
I love the fact that you only have to water it, like you said, up to 10 days, correct?
Yes. If you water it a little bit more, it will stay greener throughout the summer. We really recommend twice a week, where you're applying a half inch to three quarters of an inch of water with each application. But you can push that Mark's Mix and also our other drought tolerant mix, it's called Eden. You can push that to every 7 to 10 days and really keep it looking good, but not have to put as much water on it.
Well, that means that they're going to be really deep-rooted, much more deep-rooted than a lot of the bluegrass in other parts of the state.
Exactly. Yeah, it's that turf-type fescue that really has the deep roots, and it will go down searching for that water, and it'll maintain that green color throughout the summer, even with minimal watering.
If you are watering less, that means you also have to end up mowing less, which means you have more time to enjoy that lawn.
Exactly.
That's a win on many fronts. Spend more time.
Less water, less work, less insects, less disease. It just adds up over time. Makes it worth it.
I did see several good cherry varieties out there still in your back area out there. And you got some herbs out there, too. At least the last time I was there, you did. And I also picked up some Russian sage last time I was there.
Yeah, so a few herbs. We're getting to that fall season where we've got a lot of mums that are in bloom right now, asters that are blooming, pansies look great in the fall. And so there's some nice new plants out there as well that we're trying to bring in to keep people's yards colorful and looking good through the fall.
You have a great shop there. It's right there on Center Street, and it is amazing. I love the old shelves out there with all the seeds in it. It has such a charm to it with the old scale in front of it.
That's still the core of our business, is our bulk seed. And we have customers that come from Wyoming and Idaho and Montana and Arizona even, just to get their seeds from us each year, because they can come in and hand pick what they want, watch us weigh it up right in front of them. They can decide how little or how much they want to get. And it's so much less expensive than buying it in the packet. You can get the quantity that you want, but save, you know, a fifth to a tenth to a 20th of the cost of what it would cost you by buying those packets.
Give us a little history about Anderson Seed. How long has the company been around?
So my grandmother started the store in 1942. It was not my grandfather. It was my grandmother. And she started right in the same location here on Center Street and just gradually increased a little bit of property here, bought this building here, added this parking lot there. And so now we have the footprint that we have nowadays. But we've really improved on the property and added greenhouses and added a nursery with shade cloth. So we've been here for 82 years, and we owe all that to my grandmother to have the foresight to be able to start her business and to acquire property back then when it was less expensive. And the store just keeps growing and growing and growing every year. And we love our location right downtown here in Logan. Doesn't get any better than that. Easy to access, and we've got our own parking lot. And the customers appreciate what we're able to do for them, helping them solve their garden problems, finding solutions for them, whether it's bugs or disease or a new plant for a section of their yard that they want to plant something new in. And it's been a great formula for success for us for that many years.
I know spring's got to be your most busy season, but you do things throughout the year.
Spring is king for us. So April, May, and June are when we're just super busy. But then this time of year, we're like transitioning the store over into the holiday season. So if you've never been to Anderson's for the holidays, it's really a winter wonderland here. We end up decorating about 24 to 26 fully decorated Christmas trees, different themes, different colors, different styles. And a lot of our customers will come in and they'll see the tree that they absolutely love and they'll just buy the tree as is. Or they can just buy the ornaments and add them to their existing tree. We try and do a little bit of everything. I'll have somebody come in and they're like, I want that tree right there. Can you deliver it to my office right here? And we'll just shrink wrap it and deliver it right to their place. And others will go and redecorate a new tree in their house and incorporate some of their existing decor right into the theme that we've built for them. So we do customization as well as pre-built styles for the holidays. That includes wreaths and garlands and all kinds of Christmas lights. We have lights you can program and do different colors since the LEDs are so much more flexible now than what the incandescent lights used to be. We can really do a lot of different unique things with the lights on trees, wreaths, garlands, or just even on your house as well, too.
One other thing I've noticed about your business is that every time I come in, there's always at least one or two folks that come right out to me and ask if there's any way they can help me. There's a customer service level here at this store that beats what you see at many, many others throughout the state.
That's important to us that we have employees on staff that actually can answer your questions, that are friendly and kind and really want to spend some time with you, help you find what you're looking for, and will really help you identify what problem you're dealing with and find a solution for it and then instruct you how to use it so you will be successful when you get home. And that's one thing that we really stress with our employees, is really how to treat people when they come in and really try and be helpful and make a difference for them.
Now's the time, as we start coming into the cooler seasons. It's also a great time to start looking ahead for gift ideas for the holidays. We talked about some of the decorations you have available, but you have some great tools. You have some other great items for folks if they're looking for that perfect gift for that grower.
Christmas is a fun time for us to decorate, but we do have a lot of great gifts for gardeners. I think probably our number one gift item is our amaryllis bulbs. We bring in about 700 to 800 bulbs, 20 plus different colors and styles of amaryllis. And every year I have multiple handfuls of people that come in and just let us know that that's the best gift that they received all holiday season. So we have everything for gardeners, a lot of really fun home decor and plants that really stand out here at Anderson's for the holidays.
One other thing that really stands out to me about your company are your calendars. I have one right here in my office. I'm looking at it right now, and you do a great job. You have local pictures in there, and you have a lot of local events and things tied into it as well. It's a great calendar.
The calendar is a lot of work, and we've really put time and effort into it to make it outstanding, where it's going to help our gardening customers like find what they need, realize what time of year they need to do certain things. So it's really a gardening calendar. So it's going to tell you when to prune and when to fertilize your lawn and when's the best time to plant your vegetables outside and when to watch for grasshoppers and other insects and diseases. But we do. We bring in local photos, and we're finishing up that calendar for 2025, like right now. It should be ready the end of October, and we have about 2,500 calendars that we bring in, and they're free for our customers. And once they're gone, they're gone. Usually we run out right around Christmas. So you want to come in and get one as early as you can.
Agreed. They're great. You do a great job there. If folks are wanting to shop online, that's another option too for folks a little further away.
Right. AndersonSeedAndGarden.com. And we've got a lot of our products featured on our website. But our number one item would have to be our bulk seeds. So that's what we sell the most of, and that's what we end up shipping to a lot of our online customers that are all over the country, in fact, not just here in the Intermountain West, but we ship a lot to the South and to the Northeast and all parts of the country.
One thing I like about the seed options you have available, a lot of them are premium seed favorites, heirloom varieties, and
Yes. You
can't go wrong. I mean, and again, if you're looking for ideas, you have a great team there to ask questions, and they will point you in the right direction.
Right. We try and have the best varieties, and we try to have varieties that we have grown ourselves and we know work really well in our area. But, of course, they work in all kinds of climates all over the country. And not only do we have vegetables, but we have a lot of different flowers and wildflower mixes as well, too. And we try and have the good old time varieties that you remember growing up with. And we try and bring in a lot of new things as well, too, that you've never tried before and just want to give a chance and see how it fits into your garden.
And you mentioned earlier on in the interview that now is a great time to put in some cover crops. As we're finishing up our gardens and packing things away, it's nice to till that under and plant some cover crops over that to build up that soil for next spring and also keep some of those weeds out of the patch.
Oh, absolutely. It really helps with the weeds. But in my garden, we just cut down a whole bunch of our corn because we'd harvested it all. We want to use the corn stalks for some decor for the fall. And so that corn's all gone. And I'll just plant a cover crop like buckwheat or winter rye or clover or vetch and a couple of rainstorms, and that's just coming up all over the place. It takes the place of all the weeds. Then this fall, you can either cut it down and till it right back into the garden, and it puts organic matter and nutrient back into the soil, loosens the soil up, and really, really improves your soil for next year. And I know a lot of our pumpkin growers, they use cover crops in the fall so they can prep their soil for the next year so they can grow another giant pumpkin the next year.
I remember overhearing a couple of the growers last year talk about the cover crop seed you had available, and they made a point of it to stop by your shop before the weigh-off got started last year so they could stock up on some seed.
Yep, it's perfect time to plant right now. Gives you about 6 weeks to get things growing. And then you could just take that plant material that grew all fall and then just incorporate it right back into the soil and it builds soil structure, puts carbon back into the soil. It kind of replenishes a lot of the nutrients that you may have depleted this year by just growing your crops out there. So it's a very inexpensive and easy way to add organic matter into your garden every fall when you're planting.
And for growers out there that know this, I mean, that organic matter makes all the difference. It reduces the need for watering a lot of times. It adds a lot of nutrients to the soil, makes it more fluffy. So if you got sandy soil, it'll hold the moisture longer. If you have clay soil, it'll fluff it up a little better and make it a little easier to work with. There's a ton of benefits. You always want to add as much as you can while the sun shines.
Yeah, for sure. And on most of those, you're looking at 3 to 6 pounds per 1,000 square feet. And cost on that is very inexpensive. You're probably $15 to $30 to cover that much area. And for your value, you can't beat it. I mean, you can't buy that much compost to cover your garden.
If you're not going to cover it with something that's going to benefit it directly, Mother Nature's going to find something else to fill it in, and it usually means weeds. So you may as well put something good in there.
Yeah, definitely weeds. Yeah, anything we can do to cut the weeds down, that's going to really help. And last fall, I put a little bit of compost out there. I put some straw, some leaves, some grass clippings, little zeolite to help break up the clay, added some humate to put beneficial microbes and microorganisms back into the soil, added a little bit of nitrogen, filled it all right into the garden in November. And this spring, all I had to do was just run the tiller through the garden really quick to just break up that last little bit of stuff that hadn't broken down over the winter. And we were off and planting, and it just made such a huge difference on my garden this year.
Sounds to me like you're ready to grow some giants yourself if you have time.
That's the hard part, is finding time for it. So I'll be bringing a couple 600-pound pumpkins, hoping to maybe hit 7 before the end of the week. So,
congratulations. That's going to be awesome. Again, the big way off is this weekend.
This weekend on Center Street in Logan. The Center Street Giant Pumpkin Festival starts at 11 o'clock, should go till about 7 or until it gets dark. And we've got so many fun things planned, whether it's pumpkin decorating or creating art or just looking at the giant pumpkins. We've got movies, we've got music, we've got food, we've got vendors, and some really cool pumpkin carving. And the best thing will be our Center Street Giant, which we're hoping is going to break our Center Street record and possibly our Utah state record with some really, really big pumpkins.
I'm crossing my fingers. This is going to be a lot of fun, folks. Encourage you to come and attend with us this weekend. And folks want more information, again, where's that website?
Website is centerstreetgiant.com.
And again, where's the website to your shop, too?
That is andersonseedandgarden.com. And you can get to the Pumpkin Festival from there as well, too.
Anything else you'd like to share with folks out there?
If you want to have a good time with your family and experience something you've never seen before, please come see us this weekend, Saturday, September 28th, at the Center Street Giant Pumpkin Festival.
I like it. Mr. Mark Anderson joining us once again with Anderson Seed and Garden. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the invite, Brian. It's always a pleasure to be on the radio with you.
Opening day of deer season should be a national holiday. You might be a redneck, but you're definitely a conservationist. Hey, this is Jeff Foxworthy. Join me and America's 40 million sport shooters and 44 million anglers in celebrating a holiday created just for us, National Hunting and Fishing Day. Congress set aside the fourth Saturday of September to thank hunters and anglers for their funding and hard work in fish, wildlife, and habitat conservation. Learn more at nhfday.org.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Hey, this is Brian Stinson with Be Ready Utah. This month, we're talking about National Emergency Preparedness Month. And today, our topic is your disaster supply kit. Now, a lot of people call them different things like 72-hour kits, bug-out bags, evacuation kits, whatever you want to call it. The whole purpose of your disaster supply kit is that you have what you need to get you through 3 days, maybe 5 days, or a little bit longer before emergency preparedness resources are able to get to you and help you in a disaster situation. Some things you need to think about in your disaster supply kit: you need to store it in something that's portable, a backpack, maybe a wheeled suitcase, or other portable containers. You want to store it someplace that's easy access. Maybe a coat closet near an exit, maybe in the garage where you can grab it easy in a hurry. You don't want to have it stored downstairs in the basement behind your Christmas decorations. You might not be able to get to it. Another thing you want to think about with your disaster supply kit: have a separate kit for each member of your family. You don't want to have just dad carrying everything, because if you're possibly separated, dad's going to have everything and nobody else is going to have anything else. So each person, even down to the youngest infant, needs to have the basics of emergency preparedness in their kit. You also want to make sure that if you have something that's susceptible to water damage, maybe a radio, store it in a plastic bag right inside your disaster supply kit. And then another important thing you want to think about is checking your kit twice a year. Replace items that have expired or things that might not work, and make sure that you change those clothes out. Sometimes we grow up or we grow out, and we need to make sure that whatever clothes we have in there fit us. Make sure you cover all 12 areas of emergency preparedness in your disaster supply kit as well. Now, what are the 12 areas of emergency preparedness? That's shelter, clothing, and fire. You need to have what can help maintain your body's temperature. You need to have water. You need to have at least a gallon of water in your disaster supply kit. Food, you need to have about a 3-day supply of food, something that's non-perishable. Have hygiene and sanitation in your kit as well. That's things like your toothbrush, soap, comb, toilet tissue. Light and power is another important thing. Flashlights, you need to be able to see in the dark. Have first aid kits. You need to have communication supplies, maybe a radio so you can find out what's going on. Safety and security, you want to have maybe a dust mask in there. Have spare keys as well. Tools and personal items is another of the 12 items. That would be things like glasses, things that are specific to you that need to go in your backpack, your disaster supply kit. Cooking items, you might need to boil some water. You want to have important documents and money. It's really important to have copies of identification, copies of licenses, wills, insurance information, financial information, those kinds of things. You want to have some cash with you as well in small bills. The last item, transportation. Make sure that you have some sturdy walking shoes or something that you can get yourself from point A to point B. Disaster supply kits, that's your first and your most important area that you need to start with for emergency preparedness. For more information about emergency preparedness, visit us at BeReadyUtah.gov.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Mr. Alex Grober joins us in the garden once again with Utah Gardeners. Thanks again for taking a few minutes with us.
Oh, it's great. I love to come out here, talk to Radioland, see people growing their own food and making their lives better by planting and having gardens. And you know, that's really what it's about. If you're not making your life better by having a garden, it kind of doesn't make much sense. And so it's nice to see people improving themselves by having a garden and just making their lives better.
It truly is, and it's really awesome to see people take advantage of the opportunities in front of them. And this is the fall harvest season, and a lot of stuff's coming in right now. And if we take advantage of it, I mean, a lot of it goes to waste, unfortunately. But if we take full advantage of it, man, we could really enjoy this for months to come.
Yeah, right now, harvested some peaches at my father-in-law's, and my wife isn't able to do a lot of stuff, but she's able to stand there for a few minutes, cut up peaches, get them, and put them in a food dryer. And of all the preservation techniques in the world, probably drying food is one of, probably the oldest. And it's one of the simplest, even though we've got a commercial store-bought food dryer we use. It's not a big one. You don't need that. All you need is a little bit of screening and a couple of frames and something to keep insects off, and you can dry your food fairly easily. If you go on the internet, there's probably 100 different homemade food dryers you can do with and without power fairly cheaply and fairly easily. It doesn't have to be an expensive thing.
It doesn't need to be fancy or expensive, but it's nice. My son did a lot of peaches last year with his little dryer that he uses, and he enjoyed them all for weeks until they were all eaten up. And it's nice to be able to extend that harvest because there's only a small window when it's at its peak, then it's heading south in a hurry.
Yeah, I got probably, around a bushel of peaches. It ended up being off of two trees because the stuff on the south side was ripe and the stuff on the north side wasn't ripe yet. But all the peaches I got wasn't even one tree's worth. And so if you think about how many fruit you have there and then off of just one tree, it really makes sense to have a preservation system or systems ready. And again, drying is the simplest. It's the oldest. It's the one you have to think the least about. But it's effective, especially with modern storage. I mean, we can put stuff in a plastic container and dried fruit can last for years. And so it's really a good way to go.
We were at the State Fair the other day, and it was just neat to see all the different high-end home canning projects that have been done. Really neat, some of the options out there. We saw currants were canned. There was a master canner that she had probably, I would guess, at least 20 different exhibits on her own. And they gave her a special award for canning such a wide variety of different produce. And they were beautifully presented, too. It was really neat to see that. And I didn't see purslane there, like your neighbor did, pickled purslane, but there was a lot of other unusual and unique things that were done there.
Can you imagine the reaction of the judges walking up to a bottle of pickled purslane and looking at it and trying to figure out what it was?
I know. I think it's neat. I love variety, and I think it's neat to have that variety and to be able to do it safely and preserve those things. And for me, it's always like a treat for me in the wintertime to open up something that we can from the summer and re-experience some of that. I mean, it's never its full flavor. It's never its full texture or anything, but it's good enough that it brings some nice warm memories back to you when it's really cold outside.
I mean, you talk full flavor and full texture, and that's with typical canning. But if you think about it, probably the second oldest way of preserving something would be pickling it. And if you pickle it, then you don't have the original texture or flavor, really. You're expanding into something completely new. And we have gotten away from pickling in our culture because we go buy a bottle of pickles at the store and call it good. But the day I walked into work and one of my coworkers had a bottle of pickled asparagus was a bit of a revelation for me. I never thought of pickling asparagus. And yet there was. And it's one that when I finally get to the point where I can put the asparagus beds in, that I'm definitely going to be looking at as a possibility because that's something I enjoy. And if I have a lot of it, it's all going to come on at once. There is just no way to just let asparagus sit in your cupboard or sit in your refrigerator. You've got to use it now, and it actually made a really quite a treat, actually, when he shared some with me. And so when we look at the pickling aspect of it, there's a lot more that we can do, and we can really expand what we're able to accomplish and what we're looking at as far as food storage. And a lot of these techniques traditionally would have kept something for over the winter. But some of it, even if you just extend the eating season for a couple of weeks, that gives you the time to finish off all the food and to keep it from going to waste that way. So those are very important factors.
I've always enjoyed pickled green beans, pickled yellow and green beans. They're always a fun treat and a great display for the holidays, too.
Yeah. And that reminds me that we talked about pickling. I was thinking about pickled beets, and I just remember the event we had on Friday, and they made lemonade with beets. And I just connected to all that, and there are different ways to use food. This lemonade we had there was prepared, wasn't it? Utah State Extension that did that.
That's correct, and it was delicious. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And had a bright color to it, and it was fun, and it wasn't overwhelming either. It was a good balance. I was quite impressed with that one.
Yeah, so was I. I really was surprised with that. And that's one thing that if you open yourself up, and just these days it's so easy to do research on something. Just open yourself up and go look at something new and something different for a product you're growing and you may have surplus on. I mean, there's so much out there to do these days, and we just forget it, and we have that, and we'll use it for watching YouTube videos, which is not a bad thing for food research. Not always the right thing, but it's not a bad thing. But also, just using it for entertainment. We can use the internet as a really legit, good research tool. We can check and see how to keep our food safe and check with the expert agencies that way. And I'm almost sure if I picked up my computer right now and looked up beet lemonade, I'm willing to bet there's a recipe on there that's sitting right there.
I haven't looked it up myself yet, and that's on my radar, though. I do want to try that again myself and experience that with our family at home for a family event. And there's so many options. In addition, if you have an excess of food in your garden, feel free to share it with the neighbors. Feel free to share it with the food bank. We dropped some tomatoes by Tabitha's Way just this other week, and I was surprised how easy it was to get things dropped off. It was real simple, drop it off, and they were happy to have it, and people were anxious to have those heirloom tomatoes. And it's a good thing to share with others, and it can only bring you good karma for next year's garden.
Yeah, Tabitha's Way is a great organization. I live probably just 3 or 4 blocks away. It's just on State Street in American Fork. I think they've got another location down further south. But that's a great organization, and if you've got that excess that a lot of us do have, if you've got too much that you can't handle, your family can't take care of, you've canned all you need to, whatever, go give it to a charity like that. Go ahead and reach out and help other people. We can't help everyone in the world that needs help, but if we reach out and do a little bit for somebody, then eventually we'll be able to get to the point where everyone can be taken care of. And that's just through volunteering. That's just through being open and generous in our own stuff. And that's a really, really powerful, really, really significant tool in dealing with poverty and dealing with the want and the hunger that goes on even in our own neighborhoods.
You know, one of the things that held us back was somewhere I picked up a bad rumor somewhere that said they only accepted canned foods, and that's not the case. A lot of these food banks, they actually offer options for fresh produce too, and so don't feel bashful about sharing that. I learned a lot. I had a chance to tour their facilities. They had great refrigeration set up there, and it was neat. They had a really beautiful inside. It was neat to be able to do that, and we'll bring some more their way in the next few weeks too as we see more come on the vine.
Yeah, that's great. I don't have enough surplus right now. I'm still building my gardens out there, and so I don't have a lot of surplus. But the great thing is I know I literally, like I say, maybe 3 blocks away. It's an area that I've known for a long time where it's located in American Fork, and it's, you know, I could even walk there if I had to help other people. And that's a great opportunity. I wish I had the address sitting right in front of me right now. We could give that on the radio, but a great opportunity. But also, again, preservation. We've talked about drying. Pickling is, again, another really, really traditional. We talk about canning a lot in Utah, and canning is really just the newcomer on the block. We really haven't been canning foods for more than about, maybe a century and a half. No, actually, it would have been even longer than that. The first canning was done in Napoleonic times as a way to preserve food for the military, and they used to do it in champagne bottles because they could handle the pressures needed to do it, which meant that you could do peas. But so as time progressed, they worked through bottling, and then they got the commercial canning, and it's something that we think is being really old school and old fashioned right now, but it's actually the new kid on the block as far as food preservation. About the only thing that commonly we might see more of that's common would be freeze drying, which would be a whole different matter and a whole different level of technology. But yeah, so canning is really, in my eyes, just one of those great gifts, because putting fruit in a bottle and being able to keep it for any period of time is just something so fantastic that our ancestors would just think it was magic to be able to do that.
You think about it, for centuries, you know, a lot of folks dealt with bad meat, or they just had to deal with it when it went bad. And as a result, a lot of salt. That's when this pepper started coming in fashion, because that covered up some of those flavors. And they found better ways through the drying, like you talked about, and through canning down the way. And freezing is even newer than that. I mean, freezing is an amazing way to maximize texture and flavor and those vitamins, too.
Yeah, that's true. There's freezing's in there, too. It's a little bit newer than canning. I say a little bit, it's actually just a little bit. And unless, of course, you're an Eskimo, in which case maybe you've already used that traditionally.
Yeah.
But for most of the rest of the world, yeah. And like what you say, I've read the study and the work on it put out by extension agencies, and freezing actually preserves more the nutrition than any other method. And I think we forget that. Of course, also on freezing, that requires that you have a constant supply of electricity to do it. And so freezing is an interesting technology. It's great, but it does have residual cost, whereas most of the others is a little bit of cost up front and then you're done.
That's the one that's a little bit of a catch, you know. I mean, the other ones will stand on their own, as long as you keep them in a cool, dry place, as long as they don't end up getting broken like in an earthquake or something, you can keep those for quite a few years.
Yeah, so there's really actually pluses and minuses to each method. You mentioned earthquakes, and that is a big issue with preserving food through bottling, because those bottles break. And in an earthquake, I've not been through one severe enough to break bottles, but if we did ever have the big one, even bottles we think are kind of well protected would probably break, and we'd have issues with that.
Something to keep in mind as we do store these things up, because we do live in earthquake country. We haven't seen a real big one in a long, long time, which means we're overdue for something.
Well, I mean, 700 years this way, 700 years that way, who's counting, right? It's really hard on those earthquakes. But don't let that stop you from doing it, because if the big one ever hits, that'll be the only big one, and then things will go kind of back to normal after a while as far as being able to do these things. So everything's a risk. I mean, if you dry food, there's going to be a risk. If you freeze food, there's going to be a risk. Don't get too tied up in the risk factors on it.
You always are better off preparing in one form or fashion. If nothing else, you're gaining good knowledge on how to do that on your own. Knowledge is power.
Yeah, and I like that. The knowledge is power. The reason we can do a lot of the things we do today is because we have an understanding of how bacteria and molds and fungus work. And if we did not have that, we wouldn't be much beyond those Napoleonic champagne bottles with peas in them. We would sort of know that we're sort of preserving food, but we really wouldn't know how it works and how to keep us safe. And part of that is also knowing that there are toxins in our environment, early stuff. They soldered cans with lead solder when they started canning, and that's just a recipe for disaster eventually. And so there are really a lot of things that really made a huge difference in human health over the last century and a half. It's been amazing.
We're excited about it. I love the fall season. I love harvesting. I love saving things. I encourage people to take advantage of it. And if you don't have anything growing in your garden right now, or if you don't have a garden, stop by some of those farmers markets. They have fantastic local produce. The flavors you can't beat. I mean, those heirloom tomatoes, make a big old tomato sandwich, you will not go wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And when you go to the farmer's market, pay attention. I was shocked a few years ago when I walked into a farmer's market and they were selling blueberries. And I know a little bit about growing stuff, and I made sure I checked all the fine print, and I finally found out those blueberries were coming from Oregon. And so when you go in, don't be afraid to ask the farmer, where was this grown? Is this local? Especially if it looks a little bit, I don't want to say shady, but as far as local grown, a little bit questionable, make sure you know what you're getting. And there's nothing wrong with buying a blueberry out of another state, because you're going to be hard-pressed to find one grown here in this state. But if you go in there, go ahead, talk to the farmers. I've always found that they're very, very willing and very open in answering your question, and you should at least know what you're getting. And if you're looking for fresh local food, then you'll know it.
And I've noticed also that they love to share their stories. They love to explain why they grew what they grew. They love to explain what sets them apart from everybody else. There's a story and there's a heritage with each seed that they plant, where they grow it and how they grow it. It's a lot of fun to join those folks at the farmers markets, to be there. And a lot of them will even sample you some of their products. You know, the honeys, we sampled some honeys at a farmer's market in Springville just the other day. And boy, they had some really neat stories behind where they were getting them from and what plants were being used by the honeybees there and what's in them. And you could spend easily 20 minutes visiting with a farmer and discovering something new and then becoming a new believer in some of the things that they do. It really is neat.
Yeah, and another really cool thing about the farmer's markets is those folks are generally really friendly and really open about what they do, and some of them are real experts in what they do. There's a gentleman, I actually met him, and he does tomatoes. He's up in Salt Lake County, though, so I've never bought anything from him because I don't like traveling that far, really. But he does tomatoes, and he'll share his favorite varieties, and he'll talk to you about them, and he'll communicate. And so there's all this potential interaction for learning how to do your stuff better. And the farmers, good farmer, is going to realize that sharing the information and sharing his secrets isn't really hurting himself. It's not competing against himself. People will respond to that, and people will come buy your stuff because you're willing to talk about it, willing to be open. And the good farmers, they know that, and they'll be able to help you. At the same time, they know that when you need something, that if you have a bad year or whatnot, you'll come back to them and you'll refer others back to them. So that's a really great thing, is to go there and to just mine the well of experience there.
That's right. They're fun to go to, folks. If you've not been to one, it's a totally different experience than going to the grocery store where you talk to a store clerk that may or may not know anything about anything. So it's definitely a step up.
They should require that they have somebody in the produce department with a degree in horticulture and 5 years of growing. We would have much better produce if somebody knowledgeable was in charge of buying and selling the material.
I run into so many people, for example, that say they don't like tomatoes, but it's entirely because that's the stuff that they buy at the store oftentimes is what they end up trying, and I can understand that. I can recognize why they don't appreciate a tomato, because it doesn't taste like anything. You try one from a farmer's market, and it'll be a game changer for you. You'll totally change your mind.
If you're like me, you grew up on green tomato mincemeat. Is that something you had when you were a kid?
Mincemeat. Now, we've talked about this before. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a good one.
And, you know, it's funny because last time I made it, and it's been a couple of years since I made it. I don't go through it very fast because I'm the only one in my house that'll eat it. Love it. But I will actually go to the supermarket when they get in a load of usually, you know, something like Roma's, the good canning tomato, except the supermarket tomatoes are so poor and they're picked so early that when they get there, quite often it tastes just like a green tomato, even though it's actually turned red. And so when I do a big batch of green tomato mincemeat, if I'm not going to have a lot of tomatoes that year, I'll just go to the store, buy the early canning tomatoes that were picked way too early, and I'll use those for my green tomatoes because the only difference is the color. The flavor, the texture is all just like it was when it was green. And so sometimes you can cheat using store produce.
That makes sense. And fried green tomatoes, at the end of the season when things are done and the other ones won't quite get there, we pick a lot of tomatoes and try to wait for some of those to ripen, and some of them just end up being fried green tomatoes or some other little treats like that, or like you said, the mincemeat or other options. Don't throw those away just because it doesn't fully ripen up. Take advantage of those. There's a lot of energy that went into those, and it's a totally different culinary experience. It really can elevate your taste buds experience for the year.
Really, our culture is still afraid of tomatoes. Back in colonial times and prior to that, tomatoes were considered by many to be just this toxic, dangerous fruit, and you shouldn't eat it. And even today, we've still got a lot of that legend and folklore surrounding tomatoes. I was talking to a gentleman, and he was talking about poisonous tomatoes, and I had to stop him, and he was talking about green tomatoes being poisonous, and I'm like, actually, they're not poisonous. And I talked to him, and I think I must have insulted him.
He's leading the way along the rocks and streams. He's sharing his campfire from season to season. New places and people with stories and dreams. Through cadence of nature, the wilderness beckons. A song of the mountains rings out through the trees. The voice of the backcountry echoes forever. It carries the message, live wild and free. Wild and free. The song of the mountains is calling to me. Wild and free. In the great western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.